Hello and welcome to the IMD Podcast Network. This week, we're bringing you a conversation from OWP Singapore. Omar Tulan, IMD's Professor of Strategy and International Management, is talking to Dan Luo, a seasoned business leader who's driven growth and profitability at multinational groups such as Heinz, Lego, and Fonterra. Dan holds a Bachelor of Computer Science from Wuhan University in China and an MBA from IMD.
Welcome to our fireside chat session. My name is Omar Tulan. I am the Dean of the MBA program back in Lausanne. And so it's a great pleasure for me to be hosting this session. It's become a bit of a tradition the last few years for us to host a fireside chat session with one of our prominent MBA alums. And today we have the pleasure of having with us Dan Luo, who is has had a remarkable career since she graduated from the program back in 1999. So a little selfless promotion of the MBA as well. But it's great to have her here today to discuss with us. I have a number of questions to ask her about her career and advice that she would give going forward, and then open it up for questions from the audience. But I'd first like to introduce Dan a little bit more. As I mentioned, she is an MBA alum from IMD from 1999. She's had a very successful career in driving growth and profitability in a number of organizations, mostly related to consumer goods. 13 years at Heinz Corporation, where she was managing director for ASEAN, as well as Lego, where she was managing director of Singapore, here in located locally, and also had prominent roles at Fonterra, as well as Carlsberg. So a very illustrious managerial career. And she has since transitioned more into board roles. And that's, I think, where we also want to explore and seek her insights on. And she's an independent director at First Resources Limited, as well as Yao Hiap Seng Limited and Venture Corporations. And it's a great pleasure to have you here today to share with us. So thank you very much for being here. I thought I would just start off with a quite broad question, maybe ask if you could talk us through a little bit your own journey in terms of how you've reached where you are today.
Okay. I feel honored to be back to IMD. I come from China, mainland China. I often joke with people, you know, I come from the most famous city in China. That's Wuhan. I left China more than 30 years ago when China was still very poor, underdeveloped. And unlike most people who left China at that time, I chose a very unusual path. So my first stop after leaving China was Thailand. I worked in operational roles across supply chain in a manufacturing company and later on moved to companies like Mattel Toy. 7 years in Thailand, you know, I became a middle-level manager, a department head. I had a very comfortable life. But when Asia crisis hit Thailand, I started to ask myself, what's next? Yeah. So I wanted to further develop my career. And I decided doing an MBA is my next important step. So I did some research and I decided to go to Switzerland to attend the MBA at IMD. Yeah.
Great choice.
Yeah, it's true. Later on, I will tell you. Yeah, it's probably the best investment for me in my lifetime. After IMD, I joined Heinz in World Headquarters in Pittsburgh. And I changed my functional domain from operation to finance, business planning, and eventually I moved to general management's role. Yeah. After Heinz was bought over by private equity, I left Heinz. I joined Lego. And my last executive role was with Fonterra, a New Zealand dairy cooperative. I was leading a global business unit to develop advanced ingredients in health and awareness space. So I have experience in both B2C and the B2B sectors. Yeah. In terms of board career, I started to pursue my board career at least 10 years ago when I was still with Lego. And in 2027, you know, an opportunity pop up from Yao Hiap Seng, that's a Singaporean food and beverage company active in Southeast Asia. I was the only one on the list of the candidates who has I was the only one who had the food and beverage experience, you know, so that's how I started my board journey. About 2 years ago, I stopped my full-time role. I left the corporate. I decided to give myself some time and space to develop my board career. So the last 2 years, I have made good progress. Now I have three companies in my portfolio. They are very different, you know, from food and beverage, palm oil to technology company. So with a diverse portfolio, I enjoy learning about the new industry, new sector. At the same time, I enjoy contributing to the board matters, leveraging my experience and network.
Thank you very much for that introduction. You already mentioned that you've had a number of leadership roles, obviously, over the length of your career. And IMD is an institution which is known for leadership development. We put a lot of emphasis on it. How would you describe your leadership style? And what, in your mind, defines a good leader?
My default leadership style is democratic style, because I don't think I have the expertise in all functional domains or in all markets we play. So I expect my team members to contribute into the decision-making process. I believe that collectively we can make a better decision. There are times, you know, the final decision will be made by me and I own that decision. I'm fully aware of that. There are times that the decision may not be pleasing everybody. But if I believe this is the best decision for the business, I will still push ahead and implement it. But I can tell you that internally I do struggle with the conflicts I have to handle. I do not enjoy the conflicts. I can handle them, but I don't really enjoy it. I see that's part of our leader's job. Yeah. A good leader, in my view, is someone who has clear vision to the organization he leads or she leads. A good leader is able to assemble a strong team together, attract talent, and get the most out of the team members. I reflected on my own career journey, you know, and thought about the bosses I had. My favorite boss was someone in Heinz, you know. So he's someone making me feel valued and inspired. He's someone I want to spend time with, you know, either sharing with him my challenges, difficulties, my success, and the joy with. Instead of shying away. You do have some bosses, you don't want to talk to them. Yeah. And he's also someone who challenged me, you know, give me a difficult task and help me to learn and grow and develop my career. So I think that's what sets him apart from all the other bosses I had in the past.
So, I mean, and often those, when we think back to our own life journeys and particularly leadership journeys, we oftentimes identify certain milestones or, let's say, inflection points where we say that had a fundamental impact or took us in a certain direction. What will be the inflection points in your career?
I think I have four key milestones in my career, in my life. The first one would be leaving China. Leaving China gave me the access to abundance of opportunities outside of China, and also to help me to explore and live a very different life. I know that if I didn't leave China in the past, right, I would have a very different life. But I'm very happy with the choice I made. I'm happy with both my professional life and the personal life. The second important milestone would be going to IMD to do my MBA. Yeah. IMD MBA basically helped me to set up a strong foundation for me to develop my career in the international arena. When I left the MBA, I had four offers, and I chose to go to the US to join Heinz. I managed to change my geographic location, you know, from Thailand to the US. A functional domain from supply chain operational role to finance, and also change the industry from baby products to food and beverage. And on top of that, I found my love in the life, my husband. We met in the MBA program, and we got married shortly after MBA. Actually, I know Professor Omar cannot put this in the marketing advertisement.
It's one of the we can't advertise it as a selling point, but it oftentimes happens.
Yeah, and I would say it has a very high success rate. In my year, out of 83 people, we had 5 couples. We met in a program. We got married. We are still together. Very high successful rate. Yes. Yeah.
Maybe we can put it in the marketing then. It's data paint.
My third my important milestone is moving up to the GM level. You know, halfway through my career with Heinz, I started to express to my boss, you know, I wanted to be able to manage a business at some stage. I want to be considered. Yeah. At some stage, my boss came to me say, okay, you want to be a GM here? There is a small portfolio. It's nothing fancy. It's a trading business, mainly in Singapore, Malaysia, and it's loss-making. Do you want it? I didn't hesitate a single second. I said yes, because I can only learn and grow. Yeah. After I turned around the business, I expanded the business into altogether 6 markets. Then I got an opportunity to manage a much bigger, more complex business in China. So I think this first GM role is very important for me. Yeah. The last important milestone would be starting my board career. I think for me, you know, the first board role is always very difficult to pursue. The fact that, you know, I already left Heinz, I was with Lego, and this F&B company opportunity pop up, I was at the right place at the right time. Yeah. That's how I started my board journey. And I would say starting the board journey helped me to break the glass ceiling. And I feel very, very proud of that.
Excellent. Thank you so much. You mentioned in one of your previous answers, one of the challenges you face with leadership is sometimes, you know, conflict is not something any of us, I think, really enjoy. But if you think back and across your career, what leadership challenges did you face? And how did you encounter them?
I think probably the most difficult leadership challenge I faced was my second GM role. That's the frozen food business in China when I was working for Heinz. It's a massive business. Imagine, you know, I was moving from a small trading business to this manufacturing company. Yeah. We had a nationwide operation, 26 sales offices, distribution centers. We had 4 factories in all 4 regions, in addition to our headquarters in Shanghai. We were active in 7 different categories. The business was very seasonal. During peak season, we had more than 2,500 people working for this business. Very labor intensive. And it's huge loss making. So when I got this role, you know, again, I didn't hesitate to take it on. Because I told my boss, I will not make this worse. I can only make it better. during my first handover trip, you know, to Shanghai, I learned actually the global team made a decision. They want to pursue a sale of the business. At the same time, they need me to manage that business because they didn't know whether they could sell or when they could sell. So with the uncertainty of the business, I decided to go to Shanghai myself. Mm. So from personal life, it's extremely draining for me. So I was commuting back and forth every 2 weeks between Shanghai and Singapore for more than a year for that role. But work-wise, I enjoyed tremendously because I learned so much. So after I took over the business, you know, within 3 months, I worked with my team to develop a new strategy to turn around this business, including a big scale restructuring plan. When the CEO got the plan, he said, I like the plan. You can do everything you want except the restructuring because I'm still pursuing the sale. Yeah, so I understand that part. So I immediately lead my team, you know, to implement the strategy. And I launched the company-wide newsletter sharing our strategy. And also going around the factories, doing the roadshow, communicate to employees and motivate them. I even get the approval from the CEO that, you know, whatever loss reduction we get, a fraction of that will be used as a special bonus distributed across the entire workforce. Yeah. So month after month, we started to reduce our loss. At some stage, the sell team got a deal almost lined up with a local company. That's where, you know, somehow the rumor leaked out and we started to see strikes in the factories. I started to get the messages from employees telling me, you know, you cannot sell this company to a local player because they are worried that the local player may not honor the employees' rights. And that's a fair concern. And there were employees sending me the message saying, boss, we like you, but our fees wouldn't recognize you, you know? So at some stage, I was worried. I told my husband, I'm flying out Monday morning, but I don't know whether I can come back safely in one piece next trip, yeah. The things were very dramatic. You know, just right before we wanted to announce the sale plan, somehow the CEO actually changed his decision not to sell at that juncture. And he immediately approved for me to do restructuring. You know, that's about August time. And then I convinced the CEO that we should wait until after the Chinese peak season to make the sale, because this business is highly seasonal. So we need to capture the value during the peak season, no matter whether we want to sell the business or keep the business. And the CEO agreed. So I quickly assembled a shadow team. So we have a shadow team member going with every functional leader. So one team focused on building the business, preparing for the Chinese New Year. The other team work on restructuring plan. We actually did very well in that Chinese season. You know, it's the first time ever we had the market share increase in the East region by 2 percentage points. And we made money in that Chinese New Year peak season. And right after the Chinese New Year in March, you know, I went to the most difficult side to announce the restructuring. You know, we have a big team. So 5 team, we have simultaneously announcement at the same time. You know, we basically shut down the operation in two regions. So it affects thousands of employees. Yeah. There were employee relationship issues, legal lawsuits, you know, but in the end, we settled all of them. And we managed to establish very good relationship with the local government. And we compensated the employees way beyond what the law required. Yeah. So by the end of March, there was no single negative news for Heinz. So the restructuring plan was successful. And then after that, I came back to see my family in April. So what's interesting is that eventually, Heinz sold that business right after Heinz was bought over by private equity. Okay. Yeah. I enjoyed that experience because there were a lot of challenges, but I learned a lot. And I also feel proud that I was able to create a big impact to the company and also to the people in that business.
I think from your story, it resonates with what I always view as the sign of a successful leader is somebody who can make difficult choices. It's very easy to make a choice when there are no options and there's only one option that you can take. And to get other people to buy into that choice, I think, is the sign of a true leader. So thank you very much for that story. It also relates to a question I want to pursue with regards to you've worked in different geographies with different types of workforces, different nationalities. Do you need to adapt your style when you're in the U.S. versus China versus Singapore versus Thailand? And how do you do that?
Yeah, I think I'm fortunate that I have lived and worked in many different markets, different countries. So I had the opportunity to appreciate the cultural differences. You know, in China, Chinese people speak very loud. Speaking forcefully is a way to demonstrate our determination to get things done. But speaking forcefully can be seen as very rude in countries like Japan or UK. And same thing, let's say in countries like the Netherlands, Denmark, and New Zealand, people are down to the earth. They are very direct. Just, you know, they're nice people. They want to tell you what they think. So they can say something right to your face, right? And sometimes people in Asia would think this person is too blunt, right? What he's trying to do, yeah. I think through my experience, by even starting from IMD MBA, because in the class, there are people from all over the world, you know, yeah. And they also work in different geographic locations. I start to appreciate that the cultural differences. So my approach was I try to spend time to get to know each person at each individual level, because we cannot take it for granted, say, it's a stereotype. All Japanese are shy. That's not true. Yeah. So we have to get to know everybody at an individual level and then tailor our communication to the person we talk to. Yeah. One example I could give, one of the bosses I had, not my favorite boss, and he's extremely intelligent guy, but he has very short temper. Yeah. He may come back to you after he blew up everything and then came back, try to talk to you gently, you know. But I realize, you know, I have to mirror his way of communication. So if I do not agree, I stand very firm. I can speak very loud back to him. Mm-hmm. By doing that, I actually feel that, you know, I earn his trust. You know, he has to take me seriously. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I learned, that you need to appreciate the cultural differences, get to know the person, and adapt your communication style.
Ah, excellent. And you already alluded to, and I'll use this as an opportunity for promotion of our program. You alluded to the MBA already as obviously an environment in which you were faced with many different nationalities in a relatively small context. What other takeaways impacted you from that year in Lausanne?
IMD MBA is actually focused on general management, you know, and even before I went to IMD, I had this little dream, you know, I want to be able to manage business in the future. So that's also one of the reasons I chose IMD. So the general management skill was something very important I learned, and especially I gained the knowledge in finance accounting, which I didn't have exposure in the past. You know, people management, the methodology to do strategy development and communication skill. What I appreciate the most is the internationalism, you know, from the students and the professors, you know, people come all over the world. I see that with the IMD experience, I got exposure to Western culture and the Western business environment. It gives me the ability to communicate confidently, you know, and working in MNC, interacting with senior management and then sell my strategy proposal. Yeah, so that has left me very deep impact on my career journey.
Very wonderful. I mean, I held the session yesterday where we discussed about, you know, what are the skills that leaders need going forward. And, you know, one of the things that we try to emphasize is the importance of strategic thinking and communication skills. And I think both of those, to be a successful leader, you need to have those are critical, but also creative capabilities.
Yeah.
I'd like to turn briefly, and then I'm going to open it up for questions in just a few moments. So start thinking about your questions for Dan. Return to the issue of board membership, right? So you're on three boards. This has started over 10 years ago. What advice would you give someone who, I mean, I think there are plenty of people in the room and managers in general, when they get to a certain level, start thinking about this. What advice would you give to someone who wants to develop a career as a board member?
Okay. Once you have decided you want to pursue board career, my first advice would be proactively share your aspiration of wanting to become a company director with people around you. Because you need to make this clear to people. Don't assume people know you and they will give you a board role. That seldom happens. Yeah. And by telling people around you, especially people who have experience on corporate governance, who have served the board directorship, you know, ask them to support you, to prepare you to become a board-ready candidate. And the second step, I would say, is to learn about corporate governance. Because board work is a serious work. You have a fiduciary responsibility. You cannot take this lightly. In Singapore, we can go to Singapore Institute of Directors to learn. We can also come to, you know, IMD to learn about the corporate governance courses. Yeah. The third step, I would say, is to build your personal brand. So if today you are having your full-time job, you know, continue doing a good job in whatever you do. Shine on your current job. And be very clear about your value proposition, what you can bring to the board. What is your USP? And the next one would be networking, networking, networking. I cannot emphasize that enough. In this part of the world, let's say in Asia, less than 15% of the board roles are filled by search firms. So majority, you know, more than 85% of the board roles are done through networks. Yeah. Why is that? Because board work is of high stake. So the chair, the board, need to feel you are very trustworthy. They need to have the trust in you before they can consider you to be on the board. How do you earn the trust? You have to do the network, build a deep relationship, earn the trust. And when I talk about networking, it's not just about going to an event and collecting 50 name cards. To me, that's not networking. You need to make sure you have the quality of the conversation and the frequency of the conversation. Yeah. You go back again and again, you know, to people you want to have network with. Build that relationship and earn your trust. The last, not least, is that pursue your board journey early at the peak of your career. I think that's very good for this audience, you know, while you are still on your full-time role. Because the company you work for is a big brand behind you. It can help you build a relationship and open doors, establish a network. So utilize that advantage.
Excellent. And if you think about, I mean, you've been on boards, like I say, for a decade. What traits do you think make a good board member? What traits should we also be developing if we want to be successful on the board?
Yeah. There are a lot of expectations to board members. In my view, you know, there are three specific traits I think very important. First is integrity. You need to exercise high level of integrity because, you know, the owners nominate board members, they put their trust in you. You know, so you have to make people trust you, you know, do what you say you will do. So integrity is the first most important trait. Secondly, independence. Although board members are nominated by shareholders, but board members should take the best interest of the company they serve, not necessarily always the shareholders, because there's a subtle difference between the two. Yeah. And in the boardroom, you know, you need to have the courage to speak up to your mind without offending people. That is a very important character, but also important skill. The last but not least to me is curiosity, you know, being humble, being willing to learn, because we all face so many changes around us. There are a lot of things we don't know. And CEO management team, you know, they are very busy internally with the day job, you know. So the board members cannot stay still. It's not a job for the retirement anymore. Yeah, board members should also learn about new topics and bring external perspective to help the management team and benefit the corporation.
Excellent. And on that last point that you mentioned with regards to, you know, being able to speak out, you know, what, you know, how does one, because one joins a board, you might be the junior person on the board and yeah, you've been there for a long time. How do you make your voice heard when one joins a board?
Okay, so for me, I'm a very introvert person. Yeah, so I need to prepare myself before I speak. Yeah. So for me, for the board role, you know, it's very clear to me because board members carry fiduciary duty. We have no choice but to speak up if we see something not right, you know. So it's kind of speaking up is default. You know, that's kind of, I precondition my mind for that. And when I was a first-time director, I was very eager to contribute. Yeah. So I was always very well prepared. I read all the meeting materials. You know, I jot down what questions I have, what I should ask, how I should ask. Yeah. So I was never shy about speaking up. So I would say in the beginning, you know, I realized I spoke in the boardroom. I was heard, but maybe not always taken seriously. Yeah. So over time, you know, I slowly changed my methodology. You know, I also learned that board work is actually a team sport. You need to build your ally. So sometimes, you know, I intentionally engage with other board members outside of the board meetings, you know, getting to know them, understand their thought process, their decision-making style. When I have an idea, I may bounce my idea with some fellow board members, get their buy-in. And then in the board meeting, when I raise it, it's much easier to win their support. So in that case, you know, I feel more successful. You know, I was heard and I was also taken seriously.
Yeah, and I think you raised a very good point, which oftentimes when we want to get buy-in to an idea, it involves a pre-sell, you know, behind the scenes. So it's not just the meeting. Yeah. That should be the easy part. It's getting the people where you know there is potential opposition to align and again, get them to buy into the decision, right? I think I'd like to turn to our audience and see if we have any questions. If you do, please just go ahead and raise your hand, and we have a couple mics that are floating across the room. Don't be shy. That's any questions? Yes.
Yeah, hi. Nice meeting you. I have a question. You said networking is one of the most important things to obtain. You have worked in different countries and different companies. How you could sustain this relationship? And, you know, you work with people and after years, you don't have any communication with them. How you could sustain and re-communicate with them?
Yeah, very good question. If you want to reignite the old relationship, you can. Yeah. So when I started doing the networking, you know, I list down who I knew, who are the important people in my previous career, different jobs. You know, I wrote down their names. I try to reach out back to them. I can tell you my favorite boss today, I'm still in close contact with him. We are like friends, you know? Yeah. So if you want, you can definitely do. Nowadays, we have LinkedIn, we have WeChat, you know, the communication channel is very powerful, much easier than before. Yeah. One technique I can share with you is that because I want to make sure I have quality and frequency on my networking, I have an Excel spreadsheet. I jot down the people I want to maintain a deep relationship, you know, and then I decide, do I want to have coffee with them every quarter? You know, and sometimes just reach out to them, send a message, just remind them, say, I'm here, I'm making progress, this is what I do, what I learn. Yeah, I'm sure they will appreciate it.
I wouldn't want to be somebody who's not on the list then. But no, I agree. I mean, networking is so fundamental and it does take effort, right?
Yeah.
It is not something you can be passive at maintaining.
Yeah, actually, somebody said this to me, say, almost nobody likes networking. You know, maybe in my life, I heard two people enjoying doing it, but the rest of us don't. The good thing is that networking is 1% inspiration, 99% hard work. So we can all put in our hard work.
Exactly. Other questions? Yes, please.
It was really a pleasure listening and hearing your story. I have one question. You mentioned that in the past, during your board meeting, they did not take you seriously. Can you tell us why? Why do you think they didn't take you seriously? I'm curious to know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can be many reasons. Statistically, usually women have a harder time to get people listen to them, you know. So that's kind of one challenge for women, female directors. Yeah. And secondly, let's say myself, I'm when I joined the first board, you know, I was the only female director, the first female director. I was the youngest. All the other board members are much more experienced. Yeah. Some of them were non-independent, meaning they had relationship, you know, with the major shareholders. I didn't have that. Yeah. So this is why it's very difficult, right? And I was also the only one come from food and beverage industry. The rest of them are not in this industry. Yeah. Of course, you know, when I share my experience in Heinz, bring some ideas, they find it is interesting, you know, but still they feel it's a bit foreign.
Yeah.
Do we really want to change that? We have been doing this for years this way, you know? Yeah. So this is why afterwards I start to change my approach, you know, engage with them outside of the meeting. It's much easier. I also recognize, this is very important for you to know, most of the board work is done outside of the board meetings. Yeah, because the big listed boards, they only have four board meetings a year. Agenda is very packed. So you need to do a lot of work outside of the board meeting.
Other questions?
Hi, thanks for all the sharing. I'm Han Wei from OCBC. I do help a lot of Singapore corporates go on listing on SGX and oftentimes introducing independent director candidates to the corporates as well. So just from your perspective, you know, I think it's great that you are an independent director on very established corporates, really listed on SGX. So what kind of advice would you give to potential candidates here where they could be invited to see whether they want to be an ID on a company that's going to be listing on SGX for the very first time? Because obviously the governance, the controls could be very different for a smaller corporate that's about to list on a stock exchange versus, you know, call it First Resources, Yu Hap Seng, they have been listed for decades. So what could be advice for people? What should they look up for before agreeing to such a role?
Yeah, that's a very good question, very relevant. And even for listed companies, you know, I would say the due diligence is very important. So when you search board role, it's interesting, you know, it's like when you find that you look for a job, right? It's a two-way assessment. You need to first make sure the company is interested in you. At the same time, you assess them, whether this is the company you want to join. Yeah. So I think regardless, you know, of course, listed established companies, you kind of have a track record you can rely on, right? For the new companies, it's more difficult. But the methodology, I would say, would be very similar. I would first assess who are the shareholders, who are the CEOs and the key management personnel, and really try to get to know them well and then assess what kind of value they hold. Do you share the same values as them? You know, value is very important because if you do not share the same value when there are, you know, big challenges in front of you, they will choose different paths. Then that's how divergence happens, right? Yeah. If you feel confident, you know, about those owners and the CEOs, management team, you share the same value, you know, then you can start to consider. You need to make sure that, you know, there is a robust governance and risk management in place. Yeah. SGS, of course, have all specific rules. Basically, you need to make sure those people on the board around you, they will decide to do the right thing for the business instead of taking the shortcut. Yeah. So that one is maybe it's easier said than done, right? You have to get to know them really. You need to get a very good feeling, you know, about is this somebody you can spend your life for the next how many years together? Yeah. I hope that helps.
But thank you. Other questions? Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm Barry. I'm part of the students at IMD doing the master in AI in business and digital business transformation. I was wondering, as a board member, how do you see this new technology coming in? Because there's a lot of interest, but there's also a lot of fear. And I was wondering how you approach it and what's your view?
Yeah, there is a very high level of hype on AI. At the same time, we know. I was reading a report saying that less than 5% get the positive ROI. Yeah. But still, all the boards, you know, I serve, our view is that we should learn about it. Yeah. We encourage board members to go out and learn about the AI, to learn about the cybersecurity. I also encourage the CEO and the management team, you know, to take time to explore how they can leverage AI in improving productivity. But AI is like a double-edged sword. You introduce AI, you have cybersecurity risk. And in one company I serve, you know, I told the CEO, I know we don't have any company-wide AI initiative at the moment, but you know what? All employees are using AI, yeah. You know, helping their work and also personal life. So there is a data security issue, you know, so we need to set up the data framework, right? AI cybersecurity framework to help employees embrace AI and explore how we can leverage that. I don't think right now there is a clear path to it, but I personally think, you know, we should take an open-minded approach, you know, maybe not immediately have a company-wide investment, but at a personal level, we should all learn about it and try to leverage that.
You know, when you've reached a certain level in your career, some people may ask, like, what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning when you've had a very successful managerial career and a board career? What gets you out of bed?
For me, first thing is I always feel that I have this inner drive. I want to be successful. Yeah, but what is that success, right? I think being a board member, the success is very different now from being the leader of the business. Yeah. When I was running a business, you know, I was making the show, right? I was running the show. I give the great performance. But the board member is, I always say, board member look at the dance floor from the balcony. We support the CEO and the challenge the CEO to put up an excellent show. If the show is not great, we think certain actors cannot make it, we will change the actor, but we don't go to the dance floor ourselves yet. So for me right now, the achievement for me is creating an impact to the business I serve. Yeah. It could be the impact to the business itself, impact to the people serving the company, and the impact for the community we serve. Yeah.
And I guess one other follow-up question I'd like to ask is, you know, obviously every generation has a different set of priorities, values. And if we look at, you know, the new generation, or younger generation, I should say, yeah, are there any values that you would want to impart upon them that you think we need to preserve and we need to make sure that we reinforce going forward when things seem to sometimes be all relative?
I myself, through my life, I know hard working is important, mm-hmm. and building the resilience is extremely important. Yeah. I sometimes discuss with my husband, you know, I think it's not good to leave too much money for the next generation. They need to.
It's earn it.
They need to earn it. Yeah. And if we, I sometimes realize, you know, actually my deepest learning and growth comes from the most difficult challenge in my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you look back, actually, you suddenly feel, wow, I achieved so much. I came a long way. You know, yeah, I'm proud of myself. So that makes me become a very resilient person. And that's extremely important because nowadays there's so many challenges around us. You know, you will have up and downs on your career. You definitely will hit, you know, at a different time of your career. You need to be resilient. And I think the next generation have to learn that. So having failure, it is okay. It's more about, you know, how do you get up? Yeah, never give up.
With that, Dan, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be with us today. If everybody could please join me in thanking our guest today.
That's all for this week. This podcast was proudly brought to you by the International Institute for Management Development in Lausanne. You can find out more at imd.org.